Welcome back in, special Tuesday edition of the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. Hope you are enjoying the tournament and a few hours of rest here before we kick back up with the Thursday Sweet 16 matchups. I'm bringing back on Sports Illustrated's Richard Deitch, media critic. It's been a minute or two since we've had him on, but he is a prior guest. He's back in New York after a nice little jaunt out across the Pacific Ocean into Hawaii. RD, good to have you back on. How are you doing, man?
Matt, how come you have not been able to get Jim Nance on your podcast? I know that within the community that listens to your podcast, I know this is an absolutely big issue. And, you know, you do work for CBS. You do have a name in the industry. You have, obviously, from what I understand, pretty significant juice at the .com. So I don't understand why a Jim Nance would, at this point, not appear on the podcast.
Well, one, I will get him on. We will be at the Final Four together, and it is my mission and goal to actually have him and Clark, on the same podcast, a nice little three-way there. So I'm working.
Spurtability, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And as for any juice, I think that's greatly overstated and exaggerated. But you have a great flair for flattering your humble hosts on whatever you do.
And Matt Davis tells me that you have a lot of juice at CBS, and he's my insider when it comes to CBS.
Okay, so. Well, Seth Davis, a very loyal guest of the podcast. I very much appreciate that for that, Seth. So thank you. Hey, man, listen, let's talk TV tournament stuff. You had a piece go up on SI.com on Tuesday here, just kind of generally. You want to run that down for listeners? And for everyone listening, this will be linked in the podcast post on Ion College Basketball's blog, but why don't you set it up before we kind of ask you a follow-up?
Matt, do you pay me enough money to set up my own pieces? I host a podcast, and so when I bring a guest on, I am the one who sets it up. Okay. I say, here's the piece, this is what this person said, and then I bring on the guest.
Right, but you know what? Matt, I'll set it up right now. You want me to set this up?
Yeah, I would like you to set it up.
All right, so,
to be very honest.
Okay, so Deitch had a piece go up basically about coaches and who's on television, who would be good on television, and he talked to a few people about that. He got into Andy Katz and how he always works with Barack Obama and gets the bracket this time of year. He's done it for five straight years. And he also mentioned, which I'm very, very glad you did, back on the CBS Turner TV Media Day, which we were both at, there was this interesting moment as we were starting to get ready to talk about the tournament in general. And I think it was Nance jokingly brought up Florida Gulf Coast because they were only one of three or four teams with an auto bid at that point, and they had garnered it 2 days before. And Kellogg starts waxing about Florida Gulf Coast, and Steve Kerr was like, just don't ask me about Florida Gulf Coast because I don't know anything. And it just was a really cool moment in retrospect because Kellogg obviously does his homework, and then we see what the Eagles have done in getting to the Sweet 16. So that's basically a lot of what the piece is, but you go into a lot of detail with other things. So go ahead.
That setup was like Bo Ryan of Wisconsin, slow, plodding, and I will take over from here like Florida Gulf Coast. Yeah. Okay. So I spent the week, even though I was on vacation, making some calls, doing a little bit of work on asking people in college basketball who they thought could be a ready-made announcer. Basically, somebody, if they got fired or if they retired from coaching, could walk into the booth and be really successful. Talk to Jay Billis at ESPN, Seth Greenberg, talk to some CBS people. Who else did I speak to? Pat Forty, Andy Katz. Is there any other sort of major name? And John Enns of
this is, you said you were Florida Gulf Coast. Let's go here.
Yeah, all right, whatever. John Enns of Fox Sports, who's going to be hiring. So again, basically, I'm not sure the names are so surprising. A lot of them are who you would expect. Rick Pitino, John Calipari, Mike Bray. A couple, though, I was surprised that Frank Martin is somebody who Greenberg and a couple other people mentioned. He's going to be working on CBS Sports Television this weekend, in fact, for the Sweet 16. So I'll be really curious to see how he does on the air. And I think, if I remember right, Seth Greenberg told me he's got teaching in his background, so pretty thoughtful guy. Obviously, we know he's intense, could be really interesting. Greenberg also gave me Buzz Williams and Tommy Amaker. And I could see Buzz Williams actually being a pretty, he's a unique personality, pretty interesting. His Marquette press conferences are always pretty amusing. So that sort of surprised me as well. Others who made the list, Tom Crean, Larry Eustace, Jay Wright, obviously, who we see on television all the time, St. Joe's coach Phil Martelli, Shaka Smart, obviously, Jay Billis particularly loves him, Tom Izzo of Michigan State, and obviously Mike Krzyzewski. Regarding Krzyzewski, and then I'll throw the baton back to you, Matt. Dave Sims does the SiriusXM show with Krzyzewski. I think it's Coach Kane Beyond or something like that. He's been doing it with him for a long time. Did not think he would be interested in being a studio and being a game analyst going across the country. But if somebody could, set Krzyzewski up, or maybe he comes in once a week, or maybe he just does the NCAA tournament, Sims did think that would be something he might be interested in. And if Krzyzewski is ever interested in television, I would think everybody's going to basically throw whatever kind of cash and time he wants to hire him.
Agreed. And I thought it was just an enlightening piece just to get a good idea.
Enlightening even. Wow. That's
enlightening.
A big word.
Well, enlightening for me just because, I deal with the sport and write on it and deal with these coaches.
Right.
And just to see, because some guys definitely are totally open to it. And some, so I think to the casual fan, when they see Jamie Dixon sitting at a TV desk less than 48 hours after his team gets kicked out of the tournament, they're kind of like, oh, that's weird. And also, I didn't realize Jamie Dixon could do TV, but he actually was in the little I saw of him, he handled himself pretty well.
I'd be interested to hear who you think would be good, because obviously you talk to these guys. But basically, you talk to television executives, and it's anybody who can provide information in an entertaining, cogent way, sort of working within a certain time frame. So, you see Seth Greenberg this year. He's had a very good year. To me, anybody who's had the experience of being in a major college basketball media market, so ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, et cetera, for the most part, unless your personality is really, really either low-key or you're intensely shy, and usually those traits we don't see among college basketball coaches, I think a lot of these guys could do it. There are some, obviously, who are born salesmen like a Calipari. There are some guys who are, have total sort of television shtick like a Josh Pastner, and they'd be really good. But for the most part, you watch these guys interviewed after games, and I think, maybe not all of them could be national, but there's a ton of guys I think who could certainly be cable worthy to be studio analysts.
Absolutely. I mean, Donovan, Patino, I think Crean could do it, Krzyzewski, Izzo, some aren't someone maybe like a Beeline wouldn't be so great.
I agree with that.
John Thompson III might not be so great, but, Larinaga, Sean Miller, Shaka Smart, all these guys, you run it on down, it's got plenty, which leads me to my kind of broader question. In your opinion, in terms of both play-by-play and color, and I know there's a very big distinction there, but college basketball as a sport, I've always felt that it actually, from a television product, its analyst and its play-by-play men have been pretty good in relation to what every other sport can produce, especially because college hoops has such a wider array of games. So you actually have a greater chance of not getting as good of a product delivered to you, whether it's by analysis or by play-by-play men. Do you find it to be at the top of that tree, ahead of the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, or do you put it somewhere second, third, fourth, or fifth?
Well, so I have to be honest with you, it's so subjective, and I don't like to, I don't like to make those comparisons, because one of the things that I've always tried to do really hard when I analyze either a broadcaster or a broadcaster is to really focus on that person individually and not to compare them to a different sport, I don't like to sort of like just tag ESPN as a whole as opposed to being very specific to whatever I might have an issue with. So it's hard. I think there are some college basketball broadcasters who are absolutely at the top of their craft and would be the equal to any others at the top of their craft in different sports. So I think someone like Jay Billis as an analyst is as good an analyst as we have in any sport. I would say the same thing about Doris Burke, is both a game analyst and a sideline reporter. I think the team of McDonough, Bill Raftery, and Billis is as good a team as we see in any other sport. Maybe, I'm a big Michaels and Collinsworth person, so maybe we'll sort of separate them. But, the Billis, McDonough, Raftery team is as good a team as we get anywhere. Then again, when you sort of hit the bottom, there are games, because college basketball has so many games on a weekend, that you see, whether it's like, let's say, the number 6 team at ESPNU, and it's not a good broadcast. The resources are not there. The announcers are not particularly good. There's a lot of sort of enabling of coaches and mythologizing of coaches. Even Vitale certainly does that at the highest level, although I like his enthusiasm, and he makes up for it there. So I would say if you were asking me to really sort of compare it, I think at the top, the announcers and the analysts are very, very good. But because there are so many games, I do think that the quality of broadcast at the lower levels of college basketball is worse than the lower levels of, say, the NFL, just because the inventory is so much greater.
Agreed. What about the fact, switch gears here, it was the highest-rated tournament for the first weekend in 23 years for CBS.
Look at you, putting your CBS PR hat on.
Hey, let's be real here. We didn't post on it on the blog, and I'm only bringing it up because you're on, because you're a media guy.
Did you just go third person on yourself when you said we? That's unbelievable.
Not royal we. You know, we as a collective, we didn't.
You're like Deion Sanders. All right, go ahead.
Okay. But, hey, listen, it is a little newsworthy. I wanted your opinion. Were you surprised? Highest-rated tournament in 23 years for CBS. Do you think it has just a huge effect in terms of four channels, four options? We had heard about how college basketball was down. It was hurting. You know, it was in shambles, even though.
Who said that?
That's not. Delos Dodds at the Texas AD. He had said that earlier in the year, and it got some real run. But, anyway, the tournament, you know, highest rated in 23 years. Were you surprised by that, and how do you explain it, Richard?
Well, you know, I don't know how to explain it, to be honest with you. I'm not surprised at the most viewed because you have more channels obviously doing the games, and I think more people are going to go to those channels. So the most viewed part doesn't surprise me. Those numbers are very good. The rating is interesting because you're right. The rating of this tournament has been really, really good. And honestly, I'm not sure what the explanation is outside of this, and I could be totally wrong here, but this is sort of my take, is the one thing I've seen from sports television as we sort of move forward is that we continue every year to become more of a big event culture. The Super Bowl gets bigger. The football BCS championship gets bigger. There's so much sports on TV that it does make the unique sports or the unique sporting events that much more bigger, that much more interesting. And this obviously qualifies as that. This is an incredibly fun event to watch. There's so many people into it because of the brackets. And anybody who doesn't think that part of the reason why the tune-in is so great for the NCAA tournament is because of the brackets, you're just fooling yourself. Money, gambling, and the fact that anybody can enter these pools makes you want to watch the game. So my sense is, and again, you probably have to talk to somebody in programming who could probably give you the better data than me, is that I just think big events across the board are getting more tune-in. And this is a really, really huge event, and people are really, really interested. And that's the fact. Because logically speaking, it shouldn't be getting more viewership because the players don't stick around as much. We don't have ready-made stars, especially this year as we did in the past. You know, we don't have, like, not that's the best example, but there's no four-year Tyler Hansborough-like person who, you know, you've watched for 3 years in the tournament. A lot of the stars in these tournaments are people who are relatively new. Maybe not Aaron Kraft, but Oladipo is relatively new on a national level. Ben McLemore is a freshman. He's totally new on a national level. So, you know, you would think normally it's not like we've had these pre-made stories for 3, 4, 5 years. So that's my sense. And I'd be the first to admit if somebody has a better explanation, I totally tip my hat. But I just think we're a big event nation, and we're watching more big events, and this is a really, really fun big event to watch in March, and it's not really competing against anything great at this point. NBA still regular season, NHL regular season, baseball hasn't started.
What about the trope that, you know, people say they like? I've heard a few people say this, a few people write it over the past 5, 6 years. People claim they like these upsets, but then they don't necessarily watch them. We'll get our latest test of that with Wichita State LaSalle, but more importantly, Florida Gulf Coast going against Florida. I'll be lucky enough to be at that game in Dallas.
Look at you.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about that. So, you know, and Florida Gulf Coast has obviously turned into a huge, huge, huge story. I mean, to me, it's the biggest story in sports right now. Would you agree?
This is the biggest story in sports right now.
Yeah, this week,
I mean, you know, we live in a world, Matt, where like the biggest sports story can be like the biggest sports story for 4 hours. I think, you know, sort of, Tiger Woods is a pretty big story, right? Going back to number one in golf. He's obviously far more global than Florida Gulf Coast, even though the Florida Gulf Coast story is better. You know, you obviously have the start of baseball coming up at the end of the week. But yeah, I would say for the last 48 hours, it's the biggest story in American sports. But, you know, as we both know, literally, if they lose to Florida by 10, I mean, we'll never hear about them again. So that's the thing about sort of sports in the U.S. is there's so much, you're competing for so many eyeballs, and there's so many sort of stories out there that it's tough for a story to really sort of sustain itself.
I agree. Well, yes and no, because they'll be off the radar just right then and there.
It's a great story. Listen, I don't want to low key it because it is an amazing story, especially given the school doesn't have any kind of basketball history. They're not even second tier status in Florida, like 10th tier status. So it's a great story. You obviously have the coach. Who's got a fascinating financial background. He's got, fashion model wife. There's a lot of, and the kids are so much fun to watch. There's a lot of stuff at play there.
Okay. And just leading into the other part of my question, do you expect, Florida Gulf Coast to drive a good rating, or is it just flat out Duke Michigan State's going to carry it so much more heavily, even though Florida Gulf Coast is a big time story this week?
I think traditionally what I've always heard from Sean McManus, always the CBS guys, are like, we want upsets the first week, and then we want the big boys to come later on, because obviously you're gonna draw, the Dukes of the world, the Kentuckys of the world will always draw far more audience than, if you had a Wichita State versus the Florida Gulf Coast in the final. There is some notion, too, if you had like a Butler versus Duke like you had a couple of years ago, you can get a really good tune in because it's sort of a David and Goliath kind of thing. But for the most part, television executives want big teams as this tournament gets late. My sense is because of the overwhelming nature of Florida Gulf Coast, I mean, this is now morphed into like CNN, forget about ESPN sort of bludgeoning it. I think the rating will be good because I think people are going to be really curious. Florida also happens to be a pretty known school. I think that will help. A lot of it will have to do with, I probably should know this. I just saw this email. Is the game on CBS or is it on True or TBS? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head.
All right, but let's put it this way. It does make a little bit of a difference, even though the tournament is on all those channels. CBS, because it's obviously still a network, will get a better rating, would get a better rating for that game or higher numbers than True TV, and actually I have it here, Florida Gulf Coast versus Florida TBS. So if that game was on CBS, it would be higher rated. TBS still is better than True TV in terms of tune-in. I think the game will do well. The game is not going – this is not going to be 15 million people watching this game. Mm-hmm. It's going to be 3 or 4 million people watching this game. But that's still a pretty good number for a game late at night on TBS.
Wanted to just get your opinions on the first weekend in general. Ratings aside, you're out in Hawaii, and if you had any lingering opinion on the game, on whatever you want to go with, but you got to enjoy an exotic locale in the first weekend of the tournament. That's pretty awesome, dude. So any other lingering impressions before we fully turn to the second weekend?
Lingering impressions of my trip, Matt, or lingering impressions of the trip?
If you'd like to run down the experiences at the local bars with, you can. But yeah, if you want to kind of go into the details of the tournament.
No, I will just say this. First of all, there's some bars. I was hanging out with my wife. it was great to watch the tournament in Hawaii. One, because you can watch all basketball and then the rest of the day is still available, which
Amazing.
Is great. Six hours behind East Coast time. So that was awesome. The downside, obviously, is if you want to see the early games, you have to wake up at 6:30 a.m. Although people in Hawaii wake up pretty early, so it's not as bad a deal. But, it was different because, when you watch the game, as I have in the past on the East Coast, I've been in Vegas for the first weekend, March Madness 2, and that's sort of a fascinating little world in itself. It's the most relaxed, chill kind of environment I've ever watched the tournament. Just watching people either at a restaurant or a bar casually checking out the games, but they really weren't like it wasn't life or death for them. The only people who were really, really into it, I think, were people like me who were invested in the tournament who lived back east or lived in the Midwest. So that was just interesting to me, just really, I'll give you one example. I went to my wife and I were in a little small town. I think it's called Hanapepe. It's in Kauai, the surf town. And we went to grab some lunch and I think Syracuse was playing somebody. I wish I could remember who they were playing, but they were playing. There were probably 40 people in this restaurant. There was a big screen TV there. There were three people who were paying attention to it, including my wife, me, and some other dude. Literally, the rest of the people, you know, they could have cared less if the NCAA tournament was going on. And that was just interesting to me because I've traditionally, when I watch this tournament, I am somewhere where everybody is into it and the whole world is into it. So it was interesting. It was interesting to sort of just see or be at a place where very, very casual viewing at best. And it'll be very different for me because I'm going to be covering the women's tournament in New Orleans in a couple of weeks. So I will have gone within 2 weeks from, you know, no one really being into basketball to, at least when it comes to the women's tournament, sort of the epicenter of the sport there.
We'll wrap up with two quickies here. One, Dan Patrick recently said on his radio show that Brittany Griner is the most recognizable college basketball player in the country. Do you agree with that? And if
no.
So, why? Okay, I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that. I like, listen, I think she's great. And, you know, obviously I cover the sport, so I like it. I'm a supporter of it. I think Griner's probably one of the 5-6 best college players of all time. I'm not sure she's the best. Might be the most dominant, but I would still put Maya Moore and Diana Taurasi, a couple of the players ahead of her. She's well known, but I don't think she is the most known college basketball player, only because I think the numbers will still tell you that there's still so many more people watching the men's tournament than the women's tournament. So while Griner is recognizable in sports, I don't think I'm not one who's going to. I think the game, the women's game, is sort of still where the women's game is, and I think there are more famous college basketball players on the men's side than her. Now, if you're asking me who those are, you know, that's a little trickier. I would think, I would say Oladipo is more famous than Griner in terms of recognizability, but I don't know. It's actually an interesting question. For sure.
Okay. And then, in your opinion, the five biggest draws in college basketball these days are what? You know, Kentucky's an obvious one. Duke is the obvious one. But beyond those two, what other three schools bring the most attention, whether that's TV to the set, web clicks, you know, to reading? Give me the top five from where you sit.
Well, yeah, Kentucky for sure, I think, is number one. I would say Duke is definitely still in the top five. You know, as I look around the country, normally the de facto would be North Carolina, though they've been down for the last couple of years, or last year and a half. I would still put them there. I think Kansas is definitely there for sure. And then if I was looking for a fifth one, I don't think there's anybody on
Syracuse,
the West.
Like, what about Syracuse? You know,
maybe I think they'd be in the conversation, in my opinion, for top five. I think it certainly would not be a West Coast team. So the question is, you know, would it float around someone like a Syracuse and Ohio State? Michigan has gotten a ton of attention this year, but they traditionally, again, you know, they had a down period for a long time. How about Indiana? I think that would be my fifth. So if I was going to, again, there's not a perfect answer for this, but Kentucky, Kansas, Indiana, North Carolina, and Duke, I think, would be my five.
All right, great stuff, man. I appreciate you coming on, giving a few minutes. Hey, who do you, by the way, with this Field of 16, who do you have winning it?
I had Kansas over Indiana from the start. I'll stick with that. Although, I have to be honest, seeing both Kansas and Indiana over the first weekend, if I had to pick again, I'm not sure I'd pick either team. But that was my thought early on. I liked Kansas's veteran leadership around a star quality player in Macklemore. So that was my thought. I know I do agree with Charles Barkley on this, and I'm not sure how much you've talked about this in previous podcasts. I do believe you have to have one or two star players to win the NCAA tournament. And when I say that, when I say star player, that's someone who's lottery caliber talent. You know, Kemba Walker was an interesting situation. You know, it sort of depends on what kind of NBA player he is. But I think in the end, I do think you need players to win those games in the end, an NBA kind of caliber player. So when I looked around this year in thinking about who I was going to pick, that was sort of, I thought Kansas, if nothing else, had two, you know, top 12 guys, and Indiana, you know, depending on where you like Zeller and Oladipo, sort of my same sort of premise, too, is that they have two guys who, if you sort of looking at NBA talent, would be top 15 NBA talent, and that to me is who I think ultimately wins the NBA, who wins the NCAA tournament. But it's wide open. The one thing about this year is I won't be surprised if anybody wins. It's just been one of those tournaments.
All right, Richard Deitch, a man of esteem and reverence on Twitter, at Richard Deitch, and Deitch is spelled D-E-I-T-S-C-H, and he has his Media Circus column on SI.com. Also hosts podcasts, which are pretty good. Quick little blips into a lot of the stories that SI does, and you get kind of the background and what writers are doing with a lot of long-form stuff. Really good stuff there. Hey, man, appreciate you coming on, making some time, and enjoy the rest of the tournament and going into the spring. All right?
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm not Jim Nantz, but I do appreciate the invite. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back on the Wednesday show. Our national writers, Jeff Goodman, Gary Parrish, that's always a trip. Look forward to that, and we'll talk to you soon.